director of the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation. Patrick, my apologies. Not enough coffee in the body this morning. How are you?
Doing wonderful, Tony. Thanks.
Interesting case that you were involved with. We talked with you earlier this year about it. The Michigan Employment Relations Commission unanimously rejected the unionization of U of M graduate students' research assistants as the Mackinac Center requested. The commission stands by its 1981 ruling that these student researchers are not public employees. Talk about this case.
Well, sure. In 1981, after 19 days of hearings and thousands of pages of testimony, the Michigan Employment Relations Commission, which looks at public employee status in Michigan, determined that these graduate students at the University of Michigan were not public employees and therefore could not be subject to mandatory collective bargaining. And what had happened was in May, in April, the same union at the same university, about that same group of students, came back in and said they wanted to unionize these graduate students, wanted to try again. And originally the administration and Mary Sue Coleman, the president, said, no, that's not going to happen. We're going to enforce the 1981 decision. And then the regents, the Democrats on the board in a 6-2 vote outvoted the Republicans, said that we're not going to enforce that decision. And that's where we came in.
What's this case mean in, from your perspective?
Well, from us, it's a rule of law question. There's two things that go into the question. One of them is the substance of the question, and that is, does public sector unionism make sense here? There are some states that don't have any public sector unionism. Michigan in 1965 enacted something called PARA, the Public Employment Relations Act, which is the law that allows teachers and local officials to unionize. And the question has been, how much is correct and who gets to set those boundaries? That's the substance question. The procedure question is about who gets to set those boundaries and how they're set. And according to the Michigan Constitution, those boundaries are set by the legislature, which is the entity that can enact legislation regarding public sector employment. And what happened here was that the regents tried to take a shortcut. They had a political ally that they wanted to appease. And so they said they can go ahead and do it, despite the fact that the statutory definition didn't seem to fit these people, and secondly, that there was a quasi-judicial decision from this body, Merck, that had said these people are not public employees.
From your perspective in this case, why do you think unionization was being forced?
The concept is you can have, unions have two roles. Most people know about their second role, but there's a first role. And that is anybody can voluntarily join a union and voluntarily pay dues and can have that union act to on their behalf, perhaps to lobby the legislature. Where it gets more complicated is where unions get mandatory collective bargaining power and get to bring people somewhat into the union who don't want to be there. Because what that does is it forces a choice on a person who's in that unit. They either have to accept the union's politics so that they can vote on how the union does its business, or they have to say, I don't want to be a part of the union. They get a small percentage of their dues back, but they still have to pay something called a service fee. But they lose any right to vote and have any control over how a union runs its business. And so that's what the forced is referring to, is this choice that mandatory collective bargaining puts on the people who don't want necessarily to be in the union.
Does the unanimous decision give it more precedent, if you will?
It just shows that it's clear. It's, you know, a 2-1 decision has just as much legal effect as 3-0. But it is something that when you have a unanimous, let's say a Supreme Court decision, it makes it a little bit clearer that the opponents were that much more wrong.
So what's this mean? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, The union at the hearing expressed a likelihood that they were going to file what's known as a motion for reconsideration. That still may be their plan. If they want to appeal, they have two options. One of them is to file that motion for reconsideration at Merck and ask Merck to re-examine its decision and come to a different one. The second thing that they could do is they could take an appeal to the Court of Appeals. If they were to be successful or not successful, then of course, then there's they or I would have the opportunity potentially to go up to the Michigan Supreme Court.
Interesting case, Patrick, from the aspect that unions are fighting for power and to keep, I would guess, to keep a hold on what they have. And, sure. You know, cases like this are setbacks for them.
Yeah, the number of students involved would have been 2,100, and at an absolute minimum, it would have doubled the number of students that were this union would have represented and doubled its dues. We were at least talking $600,000, but more likely over $1 million a year annually for a union.
All right, Patrick Wright is the director for the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation. Fascinating case, Patrick. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.